Let's try to finish off some of those topics, some questions were raised yesterday when we got into a somewhat tangential topic, but an important one. So we'll try just to say a few more words about that before moving forward in the Gemara. That we talked about one of the major mitzvahs that we fulfill publicly at least once a year, and about the fact that the sources within the Rishonim for the way we do it today are somewhat sparse. And we have put together a practice with a lot of ambiguity in terms of its makaros. So the practice of a public laying of Zechiras HaMalek once a year before Purim, and the assumption is that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, needs a little bit of explanation. And as we saw, that the idea is largely based on a handful of Rishonim. The idea that reading Amalek, reading a section of the Torah, is an obligation of the Torah, is really alluded to in Tosfos here in our Gemara, and Tosfos in Megillah as well, is saying the same point, that may be the relevance of the drasha, of the statement of the Gemara, that Kol Torah Kula is either Blashon HaKodesh or not. The assumption being that it would be the opposite of Kriya Shema, that if there's some drasha that Kriya Shema either is one way or another, either is Blashon HaKodesh or is not Blashon HaKodesh, then that drasha must be there because the rest of the Torah must have the opposite role. Then the Gemara concludes that it's not necessarily the case, that maybe it had to counter the implication that it should be the opposite, that's actually not the opposite. So however it ends up, just the question is, what is the relevance of the issue of Kol Torah Kula, either Blashon HaKodesh or not? What halacha does it affect? It doesn't affect Talmud Torah, presumably. And Rashi sounds like he's saying it affects laning, so we got into a little bit the question of whether laning can be termed a mitzvah or not, and Tosfos suggested that, well, sometimes it is d'oraisa, such as Parshas Zachar. We get into that a little bit. And some of the questions that were raised, one question that was definitely raised yesterday, is an interesting point. The fact is that Zechiras HaMalek is not the only time in the Torah that we're told to remember something, and yet the practice does seem to be somewhat unique to Zachar. So how many times in the Torah do we have a mitzvah of remembering? So 6 is the most popular answer. But it's also not 100% clear. The counts vary. That could go anywhere between, let's say, 4 and maybe about 10 or 11. Because while in the back of Sidurim, 6 is often the published number, the Sheish Zechiros is a common expression. It's also not an expression that we find in Shas, really. It's based on counting up the references in the Torah. So some of them are somewhat debated. So there probably are a minimum of 4, or one of 4 that everyone can agree exists. And then there are a few more that are less universally agreed upon. So for example, Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev, in his Sefer Kedushas Levi, so he lists, he has a kuntras on the Sheis Zechiros, it doesn't cover the Sefer, in addition to talking about Chumash, he's going to talk about the Sheis Zechiros. But his list is different than our list. He has Zechiras Eretz Yisrael and Zechiras Haman. So if you count up all the ones that are a little bit less popularly counted, you could get, let's say, as many as 10, somewhere between 4 and 10. But we do seem to have settled on 6. So what are the 6 that are commonly assumed to be the Sheish Zechiras? Hopefully we remember them. And so there is, as we see here, Amalek. There is, what else? Shabbos.
Yitzchias
Mitzrayim.
Miriam.
Sinai. And Egel Azav. So in practice, it's almost the case that no two are treated the same way within the 6. It's not exactly the case, but it's close to it. So just a very quick overview. So Amalek we've spoken about. Zechiras Yitzchias Mitzrayim is the topic what we just missed, is the topic of the end of the first parak. So right before the second parak starts, the Gemara gets into it a little bit. And what emerges is that it's an obligation probably twice a day. The Chinuch has some discussion whether Menat Torah is obligatory twice a day or is only once a day Menat Torah. In practice, we do Zechiras HaSiyas Mitzrayim twice a day. As we mentioned in our Hakdamah to this parak, we do it in conjunction with the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. There is some discussion among the poskim that there are also certain mitzvos which the Torah identifies as being connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and maybe we also fulfill this mitzvah to some extent when we do those mitzvos. This discussion, for example, Tefillin. So Tefillin, the Torah says, has a connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim, which prompted the son of Achronim to ask Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and others, some sofer as a tshuva, maybe we should have said that women should be obligated in Tefillin, because Afein Hayav Oso Hanes. If it's about Zechiras HaSiyas Mitzrayim, so then maybe they should be included for that reason. Happens to be many Rishonim assume that Afein Hayav Oso Hanes is only relevant to the Rabbanos. That's how many of the Tosfosim lay out. But the other Rishonim didn't necessarily assume that way. So the question was asked, maybe we should say that women should be obligated in Tefillin for that reason, that it's connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and others asserted that we only say Afein Hayav Oso Hanes when the whole mitzvah is there specifically as a memorial for a certain miracle. If the mitzvah seems to have an objective character to it, it's just also that it's mentioned that there's an element of Zechiras HaSiyas Mitzrayim, so we're not going to call that a nace mitzvah per se. So Tefillin seems to be tangentially connected to, or secondarily connected to, Yetzias Mitzrayim. But that's a discussion as well when you have a physical mitzvah which has this element, is that also perhaps relevant to Yetzias Mitzrayim? And then you have the question, why is this night different than all other nights? Right? So we know that Pesach is devoted to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Prima Gadim and others discuss, so what Taki is so special about Pesach if we have a mitzvah every day? So then what is unique about the mitzvah of the 15th of Nisan, which is more accurately termed Sipur, Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? So there are many suggestions that Achronim have, that the Zechira, a daily obligation, we just have to make note of it. Pesach night, we have to go into detail. Maybe during the year it could be mental, Pesach night it has to be verbal, maybe Pesach night it has to be communicated to others, every other night of the year it does it. There are many different theories to explain what the difference is between the daily version and the yearly version. The Rambam, in a fascinating comment, somehow links Zechiras HaSiyas Mitzrayim to Zechiras Shabbos. It's somehow a connection in terms of how they are performed, and some suggest that both of them have a major event and then have kind of booster shots. So you have the yearly strong infusion of Zechiras HaSiyas Mitzrayim with daily little maintenance shots, while maybe Shabbos is like that also, that maybe we have a Zechiras Shabbos commandment which comes in strongly once a week, and then during the week it's in smaller doses. So that itself is a question. So let's say if the third Zechira is Zechira Shabbos, so there we have a major, major range of views, which we're not going to be able to get into in great detail, but just again to be aware of these issues. So the Torah tells us, one of the Ten Commandments, Zachar Shema Shabbos Tekadsho, and we assume that that relates to the mitzvah of Kiddush. The mitzvah of Kiddush is a mitzvah of the Torah by the strength of that mitzvah, the strength of one of the Ten Commandments. So that is presumably the case, but how A leads to B is also a little bit of a discussion. Some have pointed out there are probably as many as 15 different views in the Rishonim in terms of how what we do today correlates to the mitzvah deraisa. In other words, how much of our Kiddush today, which consists of reciting a certain text over a cup of wine, during Shabbos at our Shabbos table, all of those conditions, so how much of that is part of the mitzvah min haTorah? Because almost all of the elements are subject to debate as to whether or not they are part of the mitzvah d'oraisa of Zachar Shema Shabbos l'kadsho. So that's a whole discussion. It seems that there are fulfillments during the week as well. As the Ramban notes, you say Hayom Yom, today Hayom Yom Revi'i B'Shabbos, etc. Every day that you take note of, and you say B'Shabbos, it's a little bit, thank you. So that's a fulfillment of Zach Hashem Shabbos Akadsho. You go shopping and you say this would be good for Shabbos. It's also a fulfillment of Zach Hashem Shabbos Akadsho. There is a statement that some of the commentaries have in the Medrash, the Torah's Kohen and Parshas Bechukosai, seems to have a statement, the way the Ravid and some of the other Mefarshim understand it, that when you study the halachas of something, that's a fulfillment of Zechira, of that Inyan. It says, you learn Hilchos Shabbos during the week, that's a fulfillment of Zechira Shabbos. You learn Maseches Megillah, you're in fulfillment of Zechira Samalek. Fascinating idea. That's a fulfillment of Zechira. But again, we assume that Kiddush Friday night is the core fulfillment of Zachar Shomer Shabbos Hakadosh. And there are many different views as to what is considered to be the Daraisa requirement. Some thought that just thinking about it, you could do it behir her, it doesn't require actual speech. Others assumed it does require speech, a question how much speech. Do you just have to mention Shabbos? Do you have to praise Shabbos? Do you have to mention Kedusha Shabbos? Do you have to mention Zechir Sesiyas Mitzrayim together with Shabbos? That was the view of Menchas Chinuch. Does it have to be Mokum Suda? Does it have to be with wine? Do you have to drink the wine? Does it include the daytime Kiddush? Does it include Havdalah? That was the view of Rambam. Does it include Kiddush and Tefillah? Does it include, does it require specifically a tour of a bracha? The Ritva Shita. So there are quite a range of opinions in terms of what exactly Zachar Shem Shabbos Lakadsho requires. So that's the third Zechira, which has a completely different fulfillment than all the other Zechiras. Thank you very much. What about Maimon Har Sinai? How do we fulfill that one? So that was a question itself. The Magen Avraham assumes that we have a whole Yontif that's devoted to it. We have Shavuos, so that's the fulfillment of Zechiras Maimon Har Sinai. When we talk about Zechiras Maimon Har Sinai, it's a whole separate discussion also, so the way it was generally assumed is that that's not the content of the Torah. That's a separate idea that we have to know the whole Torah. But the Zechiras Maimon Har Sinai means to remember the experience of the giving of the Torah, that there is a necessity to preserve the enthusiasm and the excitement of the way the Torah was conveyed to the Jewish people, and that that's what we are told we have to keep in mind. We have to preserve that experience. So what about Zechiras Ma'aseh Miriam and Zechiras Egel Hazav? So those seem to be not so prevalent in our practice. The Ramban writes in his commentary to Chumash in Parshas Kiseisei that just these are real mitzvahs d'oraisa. To remember the Egel Azov, to remember Ma'aseh Miriam, they should be counted in 613. So he has this in his commentary to Chumash, and he has this also in his commentary to the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs. Because the Rambam ironically forgot these two. The Ramban has his commentary to the Rambam, has the mitzvah sasei shaharam shashachach harambam. So one could argue that the Rambam didn't forget, he disagreed, he didn't feel there were mitzvahs. But okay, so the Ramban asserts that the Rambam forgot these mitzvahs. He says, these are real mitzvahs, you should remember them. So how do you put them into practice? So it happens to be the comment about Miriam we mentioned before, that Medrash we mentioned a minute ago, in Bechu Kosa in Torah's Konim, also says that if you want to fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Miriam, you have to learn Hilchos Negayim. You learn the halachos of what happened to her, so that's also a fulfillment.
Seems like a negative way to remember her.
Yeah, it does seem, but that's what it sounds like from the Torah for the most part, that it is a negative episode that we're told to keep in mind. The whole discussion itself, which has meant to manifest.
What we're supposed to remember is the fact that she got saras, or is it episode?
It sounds like it would be better to learn
Hilchos Lashon Hara. Right. So that's what the Ramban sounds like. It sounds like it is negative. The Chaim Shmulevitz had a sikha where he thought that remembering Ma'aseh Miriam includes more than just the Avera and the punishment. I spoke about this at my grandmother's funeral, because she was Miriam, and she passed away at Parshas Balos. And maybe Reb Chaim Shmulevitz emphasizes that the fact that the Klal Yisrael waited for her before moving on, that all of the different aspects were also a part of this mitzvah, what we have to remember. But the way the Ramban understands it is that it's a mitzvah to keep us away from Lashon Hara. It's a whole discussion. I won't get into it in too much detail. There's a lot one could say, Al Pi Derech HaDrush, about the various concepts that we're mentioning here, without getting it into too much detail. So the question is, why is this mitzvah so unique that we have many averas in the Torah? It's not usually the case that for every avera you have a story about somebody who violated the mitzvah, and the mitzvah to remember the story about the person who violated the mitzvah got punished. So for example, in the Kosher Sheitzim, we don't have a special mitzvah to remember him. So if we have to remember Miriam to keep us away from Lashon Hara, why don't we have one for every avera? Or why don't we have one at least for the story that the Torah does give us about the Mechal Shabbos? So Reb Yitzchak Isaac Sher was the Mashgiach of Slobodka, so he suggested that Lashon Hara is a much more complicated concept. It's very possible a person is going to be Nichshal in Lashon Hara because he's not aware of the consequences of what he's going to say. He's not aware of the impact. Because the Rambam writes that if somebody says something nice and it comes out nasty, so he's in violation of a Vak Lashon Hara. So you could say, well, what do you want from me? If you tell me not to be nasty, I'll avoid being nasty. If you tell me not to be nice in a way that comes out nasty, despite my intent, so the whole point is I didn't realize it was nasty. So how am I supposed to stop that? So the message of Miriam is even with good intentions, still possible to have a negative impact if you're not prepared in advance. You have to work on it. Okay, so then the question is fine. So then when does that get performed? How does that mitzvah get fulfilled? So there are some who suggest that really, Bizman Hazeh, you could fulfill all of these zechiros with Kriyas HaTorah. Because nowadays we have a cycle where we read the entire Torah every year. Wasn't always the case. Gemara talks about a triennial cycle. But nowadays we have a cycle where the whole Torah is covered every year. So if we go back to what we discussed yesterday, that the mitzvah Zechira might mean to remember something once a year, and through Kriyas HaTorah, so essentially we do that. So we could rely on Kriyas HaTorah for everything. So some suggest, Magen Avraham suggests like this, that some Ikra did, and that could be true. So since Miriam and Egel Hazav involve embarrassing episodes, involve Averos on the part of the Jewish people, so we fulfill that one, we fulfill those two in minimal fashion. But then we rely on the Kriyas HaTorah, that should be enough. The other four are not embarrassing to us, they're not things that are a disgrace to the Jewish people, so we have more public fulfillments of those mitzvahs. So maybe Avraham Nefesh should, under those circumstances, with Mefesh, we assume. It's an interesting suggestion in and of itself that that's exactly how it works. But that's how some suggest. It still prompts the question of how, if we have one type of phrase in the Torah that appears without distinction in different places, how do we end up with wildly different fulfillments of what it means? Now, it's not exactly true that it appears without distinction. So sometimes we have remember, don't forget. Sometimes it just says remember. But for the most part, we don't have all these details spelled out in the Torah in terms of our fulfillment. So there are some who suggest, some Achronim have the idea, that this is an example of what we call Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim. This is an idea that's most famous in the context of Melechas Chol HaMoed, the Tosfos in Maseches Chagiga, and Daf Yud Ches talks about this. Gemara there talks about this, that if you have, if you want to try to figure out what's the story when it comes to Malacha and Chol HaMoed, yes, Malacha and Chol HaMoed. On the one hand, it sounds like that's a concept in the Torah. On the other hand, if you read the sugyas and what we're talking about, the Gemara talks about it, so the details, they sound very drabanan. It doesn't sound like the way we relate to a mitzvah in the Torah. So Tosfos tells us that there is an in-between category where the concept is in the Torah. But the Torah gave Chazal the Rishus to define how it's going to be regulated. It's called Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim. So that idea is most prominently associated with Melechus Chol HaMoed, but it could be, it appears in many other places as well. So Rav David Cohen has in his Sefer Gevul Yaveh, he has a whole kuntras called Masar HaKasuv Chachamim, where he listed off every place where it's alluded to anywhere. I think he has probably 50 or 60 areas of halacha in the list, where at least there is one view somewhere that says Masar HaKasuv Chachamim. This is an example of something that Chazal were left to regulate. The Korban Nisano, for example, says that's the psule lulav and esrog. So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara and Sukkah about what makes the lulav and esrog possible, but it's not clear from the Torah, for the most part, where this is coming from. So he assumes another example of Masar HaKasuv Chachamim. The rabbis had the authority to define what is included and what is not included. So some said that's true also when it comes to the mitzvahs of Zechirah. So even though if we just look at the language and the Torah, it's going to look like they're all treated the same, but in practice they're treated so very differently. It's almost the case that no two are treated the same way among the six. So perhaps that's again the idea that Chazal were given the authority with each concept to determine how it should be performed, how exactly it should affect our lives. So why should it be these six? Why specifically out of all the mitzvahs in the Torah do we single out six? We certainly believe, at least l'chachila, that one should remember called Torah Kula. We think there are many other concepts that are pretty important. Yom Kippur, it's a pretty big one. I think we can all come up with a lot of concepts which are pretty significant, which are outside of the six. So why are these six identified? So one could say as follows. And before getting to it, so we have one more point which emerges from this sugi here in Brachos and Daf Yud Gimel. That this Tosus we saw, so Tosus listed some mitzvahs daraisa that are revolving around Kriya. And it says the Parshios Kigon, the parshas that we are obligated to read in the Torah, like parshas Zachar. So are there any others? It kind of implies as if there's more than one like that. So is there any other parshas in the Torah that we're obligated to read? So other Rishonim here in Brachas and Daf Yud Gimel, it's not in Tosfos, but if you look at some of the other Rishonim, so they do have another one on the list, parshas Parah. So the Parshas Zachar and Parshas Parah. So that prompts the whole discussion. So Mehechitesi, where do we see in the Torah that there's an obligation to read Parshas Parah on a level in the Torah? So there are those who disagree. We mentioned yesterday the Rambam holds all the Dalai Parshias of the Rabbanim, including Zachar. But even if you disagree with Zachar, where does it come to say that Parah is Daraisa? So some say maybe that's a typo. Maybe the Rishonim really had an abbreviation, Pei-Pei, which was also a reference to Amalek, as Parshas Purim. Maybe that the assumption both of those sections, Kiseitse and Bishalach, were being referenced, and that Parshas Purim has got nothing to do with anything. But that's not such a accepted approach, as Rosh Hashanah has pointed out. You find this in many Rishonim who are not copying from each other, the idea that Parshas Purim might be Daraisa. So where do you get this from? So Meshech Chachma has the suggestion that there is a obligation in the Torah to keep the people away from Tumah, and therefore we have to publicly address aspects of Tumah. Maybe Paradumah is a good way to do it. That's one possibility. But there is a suggestion a lot of Acharonim have, the Rukas Abosim has, and the Malbim has, which is a particularly fascinating one, that perhaps we can make a shuddah. That here we have a din, and we don't know what the makar is. If this voice in Rishonim is true, that there's a mitzvah deraisa. If you remember Parah, so we have a deraisa that's not quite clear what the makar is. And we have a din that we do have a makar for, but we don't seem to have a practice. I mentioned a few minutes ago that Egel Azav is one of the zechiros that doesn't seem to be put into play. It doesn't seem to be something we really observe, except for what we said from the Magen Avraham, that we rely on the Kriyas HaTorah. So it could be, as many suggest, that maybe we fulfill the mitzvah of zechiras Egel Azav through reading Parshas Parah. Now we know Rashi quotes from Moshe HaDarshan, There's this imagery that the Parah Aduma is a kapara for the Egel Hazav, let the mother come and clean up the mess of the child, so to speak. So there is such an imagery that this is a kapara for the other. So maybe the idea is that why do we have a mitzvah to remember the Egel Hazav? Because we want to embarrass ourselves, we want to feel bad about ourselves? Probably not. Probably the point is to remember the concept of tshuva, the concept that we can come back from such a yerida. So we want to focus on that. So Klal Yisrael has chosen that we remember this episode through the positive resolution, so to speak. We don't want to focus on the downfall. We want to focus on the kapara, and especially because it's such a gnai for Klal Yisrael to focus more than we have to on the Egel Hazav, we fulfill this mitzvah specifically through remembering the Parah Aduma. Happens to be that in many years it comes out that Parshas Parah and Parshas Kisisa are on the same weekend. So we read first about the Egel Hazav in the normal Parsha, and then we read about Parshas Parah immediately afterwards. So maybe there is more of a link there than we realize, that maybe this is the fulfillment. We really do have a Shabbos Parshas Egel, just like we have a Parshas Zachar, but it's just a little bit hidden. But the idea is that that Shabbos is maybe the Shabbos in which we fulfill this mitzvah, both according to the Magen Avraham way and according to this way, and we read about the Parsha of Parah Aduma. So that's all very well and good if you believe that the purpose of remembering the Egel is to keep us aware of the possibility of tshuva. Some have it differently. I think the way of Levi Yitzchak in his Kuntres has it is that the purpose is to remind us that we're never secure. That you might think, okay, I am so holy, I'm not likely to sin. So look, here are the Jews immediately after they give them the Torah, and they still sin. So we're never on such a madrega that we can assume that everything is fine and protected. So if that's the case, does the Parah Aduma have that message at all? So it probably does, because the famous paradox of the Parah Aduma, that it's potentially metamei tahorim at the same time as it's metar tamayim, perhaps conveys the same idea, that there's no context that is completely safe. You can't say, okay, this is a tahor context, therefore I don't have to think about what I'm doing, everything is all preset for me, everything is tahor. That even that could also lead to tumah if you're not careful. So maybe that's again a more positive way of conveying the message of the Egel Hazav, that we have to be constantly vigilant. But it's an even more positive message the way others have it, that it's about tshuva, that it's possible for us to come back even if we have done something very terrible. So if you keep that in mind, so why are these six concepts, again, it's not necessarily so holy that these six are the six, but if we Klal Yisrael has focused on these six zechiras out of the whole Torah to focus on these six, why have we done so? So maybe one could suggest the Alpi Darach HaDrush a little bit, that there is a skeletal, bare bones structure here for the key points of Jewish philosophy. So what's the most important thing to realize in Jewish philosophy? Hey, God created the world. That's step one. It's Shabbos. Shabbos is there to remind us that God created the world. Okay, so you might say, fine, so God created the world, but he doesn't continue to be involved with the world. Maybe you'll be a deist. You'll think, okay, fine, there is a higher power that put the world into motion, but has no interest in the day-to-day activities of the world. So we're told to remember the Chiras Nesias Mitzrayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu guided history directly. It's not simply that he put the world into motion and left it alone, but that history is also affected by God hand to hand. So you might say, okay, so fine, so God created the world and he guides history, but we don't have any role within that history. It's not our job, we're all puppets being controlled by God, and we don't have any personal obligations of our own. So therefore we're told to remember Maamar Har Sinai. Maamar Har Sinai represents people being charged with a divine mission, God instructing his creations. So that tells us the third stage, that God created the world, continues to be involved, and has commanded his creations to live life in a certain way. So then you might say, if that's true, so then if we stumble, if we fall, so there's no point in existing. if God has created us with a mission and we fail to live up to that mission, so then why are we here? So then that's where, again, the Egel Hazav comes in to show us that it's possible to do tshuva even after a major downfall. And that's the fourth important principle, that even when we sin, we can come back. So those are four major yesodas. God created the world, continues to run it, has given us a mission in life, and if we fail in that mission, it's still possible to do tshuva and to repent. So what about the other two? So the other two are Miriam and Amalek. So maybe one could suggest that Miriam and Amalek are two halves of the same coin. So Miriam could be Schar V'Onesh. That's a reasonable suggestion. You could also say, maybe a little bit of a different focus, that Miriam and Amalek represent two opposites. That Miriam, let's say, represents the prohibition of Lashon Hara, and we know Chazal has connected that also to the Chet HaMeraglim and the Aveira of Gibas Aretz. And in both cases, you could ask, well, what's the problem if I'm telling the truth, if I'm saying things that are bad, that are correct about people or about Eretz Yisrael, so why should that be prohibited? So perhaps the idea within both is that the facts may be true, but if your perspective is such that this is what's on your radar screen, the bad, annoying qualities of your friend or the bad aspects that you perceive in Eretz Yisrael, so that's a lack of proper appreciation for what people or Eretz Yisrael represent. That some things are so good that the bad that may be mixed in should be negated, should be negligible. While Amalek represents the opposite. Amalek represents evil that cannot be redeemed. And the message is that some things are so bad that even if good is mixed in, that doesn't take away from the fact that it's bad. And perhaps that's why also we have a practice of doing a davka with tzibur and davka with the kriyas haTorah. So the tzibur and the Torah are two things which tend to paper over problems, which tend to make something which is inadequate be absorbed into the positive. And the message is that even with tzibur and even with the kriyas haTorah, Amalek still represents evil, and that there are some things that are so bad the good does not outweigh them. So therefore, perhaps Miriam and Amalek are two opposite points of the spectrum. Some things are so good the bad doesn't matter. Some things are so bad the good doesn't matter. And we have to recognize that the world is not made up just of relative values, but there is objective good and bad, and then we have to figure out how things fall along the spectrum. So then perhaps we have six values which emerge from these six spheres. God created the world, He continues to be involved, He's given us a mission, but He can bring us back if we stumble, and that the world is made of good and bad, and that we have to figure out how things fall within that spectrum. Okay, so that's a brief overview of the concept of some of the spheres and how it emerges a little bit between the lines in this Tosis and Brachos. So God willing, on Friday we'll continue with moving forward. Try to get some of these passages in the middle down a little bit, so we'll have a little more perspective on creation and the like. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful day.